the best thing that we can do as Sanders supporters is really like hold her feet, hold the fire to her feet. Really like pushing for our values, really making sure that we're not silenced.
As the Democratic National Convention gets underway in Philadelphia, Alaska Sanders supporters say they'll keep pushing for change. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, July 25th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a top military official visits Alaska to consider future prospects for Marines.
That's another reason Alaska has an attractiveness as far as training, because it's cold here.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at AlaskaCleanHarbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
This afternoon, hours before the official start of the Democratic National Convention, Senator Bernie Sanders faced a ballroom full of his delegates and tried to rally them to support Hillary Clinton. APRN's Liz Ruskin spoke to a few of Sanders' Alaska delegates, says they left the speech and heard a mix of sadness and pragmatism.
Here's how it sounded in the critical moment when Sanders told the crowd what they did not want to hear.
We have got to defeat Donald Trump. And we have got to elect Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine.
I think it was really telling that a huge majority of the delegates in there were extremely upset.
Olivia Garrett gets it. The 22-year-old from Soldotna and now Fairbanks just might have been the first Alaskan to feel the burn.
I worked for the Bernie campaign, and I'm just crushed that he didn't get the nomination. I mean, I've thrown my heart and soul into this. I've been a Bernie fan since I was 13 years old.
Garrett says the Sanders supporters need time to grieve. Alaska Democrats gave Sanders more than 80% of the vote in their March caucus, so he won 13 of Alaska's 20 delegates. Garrett says some of the Alaska delegates remain in the Bernie or bust camp. And she tries to respect that. But Garrett agrees with Sanders that it's time to back Clinton to defeat Trump.
What I've never understood is the people who intend to vote third party thinking that they will somehow actually pull off a third party win, because it just cannot be done and this is not the time to risk it.
Genevieve Mina, president of the UAA College Democrats, says she was moved when she heard Sanders recite his policy successes.
Talking about the $15 minimum wage, talking about, you know, trying to get single-payer health care, talking about fighting climate change, and recognizing that this is after he's gotten these same policies into the platform, it's really compelling to see what he actually has accomplished in his campaign, despite the fact that, you know, he hasn't achieved enough delegates.
Mina says she'll vote for Clinton in November, but she'll only campaign for state and local races. She says Alaska's three electoral college votes will likely go to Trump regardless, so she plans to devote herself to down-ballot candidates. 19-year-old Nathan Seidel of Palmer says he's ready to move on too, hoping to not only defeat Trump, but also pull the Democratic Party to the left.
The best thing that we can do as Sanders supporters is really like hold her feet, hold the fire to her feet. Really like pushing for our values, really making sure that we're not silenced.
Seidel wore a Stars and Stripes cusbuck on the convention's first day and held a green felt Robin Hood hat. The caps were handed to Sanders supporters on their way into his speech, a symbol of Sanders' position on taxing the rich, and a tangible souvenir of a campaign Seidel once hoped would end at the White House. Reporting from Philadelphia, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A hiker lost in Denali National Park for nearly 2 days was located last night in good condition. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The National Park Service reports that 42-year-old Makunda Egan was found in good condition at about 7:45 p.m. Sunday. Park spokeswoman Kathleen Kelly says Egan was spotted from a helicopter.
The helicopters were helping to extract the crews from the field because we were winding down operations for the evening. And they happened to come upon him. He was at the headwaters of the Sanctuary River, about 6 miles from where he was last seen.
Kelly says Egan, who's from California and working in the Denali area this summer, was hiking with a friend east of Teklanika Campground Friday night when the pair briefly split up and then lost track of one another in foggy conditions. Kelly says the partner looked for Egan until early Saturday morning, then made her way back to the campground and alerted the Park Service, which commenced a 2-day search. She says Egan told rescuers he tried to find his way out.
Looking for the park road, looking for any other hikers, but ended up in an area that was just pretty dense and on the other side of a ridge from the road.
Kelly says the agency recommends hikers not separate and stay put if they get lost. She says Egan was not prepared to be out and cautions hikers to carry extra clothing, food, and water. More than 50 people, search dogs, and helicopters were involved in the successful rescue effort, which Kelly says was challenged by poor weather and dense vegetation. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Could Alaska see a few thousand more soldiers stationed here in the next few years? The head of the U.S. Marine Corps stopped in Anchorage and the interior this weekend to evaluate new opportunities for training. But as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, some see it as a potential first step in building a permanent presence.
Wearing scuffed combat boots in the parking lot just outside the Mountain View VFW Hall in Anchorage, Senator Dan Sullivan sounded delighted introducing the country's top Marine.
One of the things that we've been trying to do is get our leadership, our military leadership, up to Alaska to see this great state, all the training that we have. And it is my distinct honor as a Marine myself to have the Commandant of the Marine Corps in Alaska.
Since taking office, Sullivan has made a priority of advocating for a strong military presence in Alaska. But so far, that's been largely speaking up about the state's main branches, the Army and the Air Force. In fact, one rarely hears anything at all about the Marines here. But that could change. The trip is General Robert Neller's first visit to Alaska, and he says the reason is primarily to see with his own eyes the facilities available.
We're always looking for places to train. We've got improved capabilities from our weapons systems like F-35 and the airspace up here, and the instrument ranges, I think, provide great opportunities.
Alaska doesn't have a significant force of active duty Marines, but the status of Marine units stationed across the Pacific is changing, with several thousand service members and dependents shifting off a base in Okinawa, Japan over the next few years. Neller says there are no current plans to permanently base a sizable contingent of Marines in Alaska. However, after 15 years of wars in the Middle East, the branch is beginning to rebuild its capabilities to operate in colder climates. After taking a few questions,
Thanks, Neller, guys.
And Sullivan head into the VFW hall. The full spectrum of military boosters is in attendance. Older vets in suits, seated next to their wives, all the way to young guys in motorcycle vests and bandanas.
Just look at this place tonight. It's packed. Standing room only.
After Sullivan introduced Neller to the crowd, the commandant took the mic and wandered in between tables, giving an update on the Marine Corps itself. Then he dipped into his impression of Alaska so far, which he plans to take back to the Joint Chiefs of Staff in Washington, D.C.
The environment, the climate, the space, particularly airspace in Alaska, is very, very interesting to me as far as opportunities for us to train Marine Air Ground Task Forces.
Part of the reason for a high-level commander to take 2 hours engaging a crowd like this is to get a sense of how members of the community feel toward the military. Sullivan hammered home that Alaska and its veteran community are the kind of place that greets service members and their families with open arms. Standing near a vending machine, two tough-looking guys in biker vests agree with that assessment.
Tom Rohr, Combat Vets Motorcycle Association.
Tom Rohr is in the Air Force. As people throughout the room line up for food and photos with the commandant, Rohr says this kind of event helps to show off Alaska to senior officials scoping it out. It
tends to be pretty laid back. You know, we get real formal when we have to, right? And everybody will be up in uniform, but I think this is fabulous. You know, you get all the old veterans out here can come out, and it's just a relaxed atmosphere.
Next to Rohr is Todd Bourne, also Air Force, now retired. He says the military culture in Alaska is one big tent, and the more, the merrier. even the Marines.
Hey, we're all on the same team, man. We poke at each other and give each other a hard time, but we're all on the same team.
Not everyone at the event is convinced the Commandant's interest is just in occasional training exercises. Some see an opportunity for Alaska's military bases to pull in a new tenant. John E. Beasley was 19 years old when his Marine unit was caught up in the Battle of Chosin Reservoir, one of the decisive conflicts in the Korean War. He keeps a close eye on military affairs in Alaska and thinks even if firm plans aren't in place right now, there's the potential for a significant number of Marines to eventually be brought here.
The Commandant doesn't travel to places just for drill. And his plans, I'm pretty sure, based on scuttlebutt, is the fact he's going to take a look at our capabilities up here. I think he's taking a look at us from a standpoint of establishing a Marine contingent up here, I think. Again, that man doesn't go places without a reason.
Beasley says this is the first time he knows of a Marine Commandant visiting Alaska since he moved to the state in the 60s. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, comparing Alaska's rate of government spending to other states.
It's not a simple question to say, because we spend more than other states, we must be wasteful.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
One of the issues dividing Alaska's legislators is the level of state spending. Some lawmakers want to continue to cut spending before considering introducing or raising taxes or making long-term cuts to permanent fund dividends. Others are concerned about the loss of services and the effect on the state's economy from deeper cuts. So, how high is Alaska's spending? As Andrew Kitchenman of APRN and KTOO in Juneau reports, it's a complicated issue.
Here are some of the voices of House members on the day they left Juneau after an abbreviated special session that failed to address Governor Bill Walker's fiscal plan.
This governor wants to pay for more big government. He wants the PFD to sustain a bloated government.
The biggest threat to the permanent fund and to the dividend is big government.
It's a spending problem. Alaska has a spending problem. We have a huge spending problem.
Until we address the inefficiencies, the waste, then we don't have a right to take the people's money.
That was Representatives Craig Johnson, Laura Reinbold, Wes Keller, and Liz Vasquez. There's some evidence to back up assertions that Alaska has a high level of spending. As recently as 2013, Alaska spent more than a third more per resident than any other state on combined state and local spending. If you focus just on state spending, Alaska spent more than twice as much per resident in 2014 than all but 11 other states. In three broad categories, education, higher education, and corrections, Alaska spent the most per resident. It also was second in public assistance and transportation, and it was seventh in Medicaid spending. But just focusing on state spending doesn't tell the whole story. That's because many states require local government to provide services that Alaska's state government provides. Demographics and policy choices also play a role, according to Brian Sigritz, Director of State Fiscal Studies for the National Association of State Budget Officers in Washington.
Overall, there's definitely a lot of variations in what states spend money on and how much state support goes to various different areas of the state budget.
And things have changed dramatically in the last 4 years. The portion of the state budget controlled by the legislature has dropped by 45%. While the amount of that spent on state agencies has fallen by 10%, these drops were even more dramatic if you account for population growth and inflation. But even with these changes, the amount of proposed state spending directly controlled by the legislature was projected to be nearly 25% more per person than any other state in the current fiscal year. There are several factors that are unique to Alaska. That's what Governor Walker pointed to when asked why state spending was the highest per capita.
You know, it's not very complicated as far as on a per capita basis. We're the largest state in the union, 1/5 the entire United States, and we have one of the smallest populations. If you do the simple math, it's always going to come out. We're spread out all over the state, and so you know, on a per capita basis versus Rhode Island versus Alaska, you're going to see a significant difference. But you got to apply logic a little bit to that that equation as well.
Economist Gunnar Knapp recently stepped down as director of the University of Alaska Anchorage's Institute for Social and Economic Research. He says the state's large amount of natural resources, unusually high health care costs, and the challenge of providing services to isolated low-income communities contribute to higher spending.
It's not a simple question to say, because we spend more than other states, we must be wasteful.
But Knapp also says that the oil and gas revenue that used to flow into the state's coffers and that bounced back after previous recessions is staying low. This puts Alaska's government into a new position, being forced to decide whether residents will accept lower spending in areas like education or lower PFDs or higher taxes.
Really, for the first time since oil started flowing, we're going to face that question in a big way, where we're going to realize that we're going to have to make hard choices.
The primary election in 3 weeks and the general election in November may provide a signal from voters about what they want the legislature to do. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Anchorage is assigning more police to handle drunk drivers. City and police officials held a press conference today to announce the expansion. It will be funded by a $2 million federal grant through the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration over 5 years. The money will help pay for a unit with 6 patrol officers, a sergeant, and a clerk, all focused on curtailing impaired driving. A spokesman for the mayor's administration says the police department lost a traffic unit in 2012 amid staffing cuts. But an ongoing expansion of the police department has now allowed for more hires. The grant means the federal government is picking up the tab for some of those hires, at least for the time being. Police Chief Chris Tully says the city has seen a spike in DUI-related fatalities over the last 2 years. He says the new unit will patrol between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. when drunk driving peaks, and he's asking residents to help by calling police if they see a driver they think might be impaired.
This crime is 100% preventable. With our added enforcement and the involvement of the community, we believe we will make our streets safer and we can achieve the goal of having zero traffic fatalities as a result of impaired driving.
The new DUI unit is expected to start patrolling the second week in August. Bristol Bay Borough Police seized more than 23 grams of black tar heroin and $6,700 cash in a sizable drug bust on last Thursday in Naknek. 31-year-old Nathan Gray Wagner and 27-year-old Brandy Nicole Smith, both of Anchorage, were arrested on various charges. Wagner escaped custody Friday afternoon, but was recaptured an hour later. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
Nathan Wagner, originally from Naknek, had 2 outstanding warrants for his arrest from Anchorage. Borough Police Officer John Reischick spent several days trying to find the 31-year-old, who has a growing history of interactions with law enforcement. On Thursday evening, Reischick tracked Wagner down at a fishing site near the Peterson Point Cannery. Wagner was hiding in a blue Connex van and resisted arrest. Officer Reischick said he had a hard time handcuffing Wagner and a harder time getting him back to the patrol vehicle. At one point, Wagner made a break for his cabin, and he and Reischick ended up both going off a 4-foot-high porch and continuing their altercation on the ground. During this struggle, the officer felt a square case inside Wagner's coveralls. Reischick was able to toss that away while the fight went on. Inside that case, according to police, was a lot of drugs. An inventory turned up 23.3 grams of black tar heroin, more than 7 grams of marijuana, plus 12 illegal pills and paraphernalia for cutting and dealing tar heroin. Stan Swetsoff is the chief of the Bristol Bay Borough Police.
You know, we initially weren't out there to deal with this. We went out there to arrest on an outstanding warrant, or several outstanding warrants, and so when we found this on his person, it made us pretty happy, because that's a big chunk of heroin.
Wagner also had $6,700 cash on his person, which leads the chief to think he'd been in business for a while this summer.
I believe he was selling right out of the cabin there by the beach. When I initially spoke to his girlfriend, who we ended up arresting, she was saying that they were out here to fish the set net site right there on the beach, but had only fished once in the last month that they've been out here. So I think he was dealing, and that's how he's been making all the money.
Wegner was charged with second-degree misconduct involving a controlled substance and with resisting arrest. Wegner's girlfriend, 27-year-old Brandy Smith, was also arrested, also charged with second-degree drug dealing, as well as hindering prosecution and tampering with evidence. Borough police say she tried to hide a lot of drug paraphernalia, including some 36 foil wrappers with heroin residue and 97 hypodermic needles. Chief Swetsoff says he was glad to see all of this off the streets and these two behind bars.
You know, every year this is always an issue, and it's always brought up that, you know, people come out here, and we have several other tips that we're following leads on, not necessarily involved with these people, but definitely involved in drug dealing in our town, and we're going after them for sure.
But the police role with this case did not end after the two were taken into custody. On Friday afternoon, Wegner asked to go to the Chamai Clinic as he was believed to be detoxing badly from drug addictions. At the clinic, he asked to step outside to vomit, did so, then stood up and bolted straight to nearby alders and disappeared. Police say he then stole an ATV, drove back to his cabin, changed out of his prison orange and whites, and took his own ATV towards some destination unknown. Two police officers and a wildlife trooper pursued. Wegner was able to elude capture for close to an hour before he was arrested again by John Ryshek near mile 2 of the Alaska Peninsula Highway. Police say they're likely to add additional charges of vehicle theft, escape, and eluding. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Arctic is wild, remote, and untouched. See how contemporary artists challenge the mythical ideal of the North in the Anchorage Museum exhibition, View from Up Here, the Arctic at the Center of the World, on view through October the 2nd. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Museum. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
An 85-year-old Crown Point man was seriously injured when he was struck by an Alaska Railroad train near that Kenai Peninsula community. Alaska State Troopers say Ronald Jackson was struck early Saturday and transported to Anchorage for treatment. Crown Point is 22 miles north of Seward in the Chugach Mountains. The community of about 70 people is between Kenai Lake and Lower Trail Lake. Troopers took a 911 call at about 3:45 a.m. Saturday that Jackson was struck by the train. Investigators say Jackson had been walking on the tracks. Governor Bill Walker has signed legislation he says will provide more timber for Alaska's mills. But as Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports, it probably won't be that much of an increase.
Walker inked Senate Bill 32 at Viking Lumber in Klawock on Southeast's Prince of Wales Island. State officials say it's Alaska's largest operating mill. Its owners have said they'll have to shut down next year if they can't harvest more timber, a claim challenged by the Forest Service and some environmental groups. At the signing ceremony, Viking's Kirk Dahlstrom said the bill will help.
What it allows is the state to negotiate large timber sales with customers that want to saw the lumber. And so this bill's good for us because in the future we may be able to pick up a very big sale from the state that'll last us a year or two.
State timber sales are often small since there's a limited amount of forest available. The governor signed the measure July 19th in front of about 25 mill workers. He said it's part of a larger administration effort.
To me, it's all about jobs. It's all about economy. And so I will be extremely aggressive. I have been on everything I can do to make sure that this young man has plenty of timber opportunities to make this mill an ongoing generation of successes.
Walker and others say the bill will help the state replace Tongass timber, which has been less available in recent years. But regional forester Beth Pendleton, in an earlier interview, said Viking is logging one substantial timber sale and can bid on others so it has enough logs to stay open. The bill removes some limits on state sales. Division of Forestry Director Chris Mache says that allows his staff to negotiate terms guaranteeing more logs go to mills rather than export.
So it allows us to consistently use this authority anywhere statewide. So it really doesn't change the length of time or the amount that could be sold.
The legislation is not without critics. Many environmental groups have called for an end to logging to preserve fisheries habitat and allow the forest to store more carbon, slowing climate change. Southeast Alaska Conservation Council attorney Buck Lindekugel says it's unfortunate Walker focused on the Kluwak Mill. He said SEAC's examination of Forest Service records shows it's been shipping too much of what it logs overseas.
We think there's a little irony involved here where the state is going to be spending more money at a time of fiscal distress to make state timber available to Viking Lumber, when the records show that Viking has been exporting nearly 55 million board feet of timber cut from the Tongass over the past 6 years.
State Forester Mache said overseas sales are part of logging in Southeast. That's because foreign buyers pay more than in-state mills.
So some of the wood could find its way into the export market, but that will help the mill because they're getting a good return for those logs. They'll saw the ones that they can make money on and still will make money on any logs that are not sawn there.
He said the way the bill changes negotiated sales rules will reduce the amount exported. SEAC's Lindekugel has his doubts.
It's really tough to predict how this is going to make a difference. But we know it costs the state a lot of money to offer these timber sales. So it's no free lunch.
Mache said the rule change will actually save the state time and money, but he said it will reduce revenues since fewer logs are going overseas, lowering the value of such sales. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Philadelphia, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Andrew Kitchenman and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes and Graylin Brashear in Anchorage, and Dave Benninger in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org, where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.